Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Tawny Alvarez from Beryl Dana. Welcome back, Tawny.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, employees say the darndest things, don't they?
They definitely do.
You know, employees just speak out when they want to, don't they?
They do.
Yeah, so what the heck can we do about it? Because, hey, it's our right.
Well, as employers, we can do a lot about it, actually.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about today, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to talk about when employees speak out. Now, on a serious note, employees have opinions. Employers have opinions. What is the line between free speech and not so free speech? And I do know that there's certainly a difference between public sector, private sector, I don't know, maybe even union environment. Maybe if you're at church, maybe you're at a government employee. You tell me, Tawny, what's going on?
Absolutely. So I don't want anyone to think that here I am knocking down free speech generally. But understanding the concept that private employees of private companies don't specifically have, quote unquote, freedom of speech. If you're an employee of a government or a government entity, state, federal, then granted there's going to be First Amendment issues that come into play. But if you're employed purely by a private entity, the concept of the First Amendment freedom of speech doesn't come into play in the work environment.
So let's break this down a little, because certainly the NLRB has said that there's multiple people talking on Facebook or different things. There's a lot of parts to this. So I kind of want to break that down. So you're saying, as an employer of a private firm or a private company, an employer can determine what is publicly projected, or how about privately projected? Explain that a little.
So both. Right now I think there's a very fuzzy line between what's private and what's public. I mean, anything that we put online, Facebook, Twitter, it doesn't matter how closed our feeds are generally, it's out there. We're putting a lot more information out there. And the more data that is available out there generally about us, the easier it is to correlate all that data and to realize that, oh, I know Tawny Alvarez works for Beryl Dana. These are her political views. These are her social views, and go through all that information. And if my representation of myself and my views is different from maybe what my employers are, and my employer arguably could take action to determine that I maybe am not a good fit for the organization generally.
So let's break that down a little bit. If someone says something politically, or you comment on something online politically that responds to, for example, I mean, it's all in the news today, a tweet from a government official, could be senior, could be, I mean, Twitter is being used a lot by government today, by all levels, really across the board. And you respond in a way that simply says, I disagree, or this is blanking stupid. Explain that.
Well, those two hypotheticals are different. So I disagree. Arguably, it would not affect how the employer is viewed by society. If it was a political situation, however, let's say that you are your job is very political, that you work for a policy organization generally. You don't work for the government, but you work for a nonprofit, and you publicly comment on a senator's or a representative's view, and it is actually counter to what the organization that you represent or that you work for views. The organization might have concerns that you are saying one thing pursuant to your job duties and responsibilities, but privately hold a completely different stance. So making sure that you are a trustworthy employee who is going to be able to, quote unquote, sell whatever your employer is putting out there for the general public is important. So that definitely plays a role in what the organization's going to do. Now, if you're using this is blanking stupid or I blanking disagree with that, and you're using profanities generally out there, that is going to kind of change the whole entire demeanor of the conversation. In part, if you have anything on your Twitter feed or your Facebook posts that indicate that you are an employer of a certain organization, other people could potentially take that viewpoint as being that of your or the organization you work for, of your employer. Now, this is where the NLRB discussion really comes into play.
So the National Labor Relations Board has said, based upon what I've read and what we've talked about here on the show many times, that if it is speech that is of a, if you want to say, a concerted effort, right? So multiple people agree with this, multiple people in the organization have the same opinion, it's protected speech.
Anything that involves the terms and conditions of employment that potentially is occurring between one or more employees generally is protected speech under the National Labor Relations Act, yes, and something that you wouldn't be able to take adverse action against the employee because of. But you do have to remember that this is a very limited aspect. Terms and conditions of employment would be if the post was, I believe that we should get fair pay for fair work, and someone else says, I disagree. We currently then potentially have a very strong argument that this is discussing terms and conditions of employment because it's discussing pay rate. If this is a discussion about building a wall, it's arguably much harder to say that it's discussions regarding terms and conditions of employment unless you are a subcontractor being considered for the work to build a wall.
So if someone says, for example, my boss is a jerk, just use that as a very simple thing, right? And the boss happens to see that on social media. By the way, you probably always were, but there was never a way to post it like it used to be, right? I tell people all the time when their supervisors go, trust me, you probably always were, and probably always people said that about you, just nobody posted it before, so just get over that. But that's just my opinion. And somebody else comments from the same employee, you know, yes or like or clicks it. That could be considered speech, correct, about...
Correct. And there's case law out there that's discussing whether or not a like, so pressing that like button, is that speech in and of itself by liking, reposting. Reposting, I think, is a stronger argument that it's speech, just like retweeting something. But simply pressing that like button also is a form of speech that could be protected when you're talking about terms and conditions of employment, i.e., my boss is a jerk.
Yeah. So when an employee goes out on social media and they decide, for example, hey, I want to tell my story, right? I want to tell the story about where I work or what, you know, what conditions are. It is harder for employers today to respond to that.
It is. One of the best ways to respond to it is, especially in organizations where there are confidential information or trade secrets that are a part of how the organization operates, its processes generally, you can use non-disclosure and confidentiality agreements, which would then put us in a contract realm where if there was a violation of it, we could bring an action under contract law. But no, in most cases, if they're discussing the terms and conditions of their employment generally, anything that's related to human relations or their employment generally, there's a very good chance that it's going to be protected speech. Now, if they violate another form of your policies or practices, let's say they use an ethnic slur in saying, my boss is a jerk, and insert ethnic slur, right? Then that's a different discussion, right? Because the fact that they have said their boss is a jerk, that's protected. But the use of an ethnic slur to relate to your boss, that would not be protected. And under, with hope, your company has an EEO policy or an equal employment opportunity, an anti-harassment and anti-discrimination policy. And then we would be taking steps through HR, through your lawyers, to discipline in some form at that type of speech.
We're talking with Tony Alvarez, attorney at Verrill Daner. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, David Chulo. We're talking about when employees speak out and what really we can do about it. Tony, one of the other things that I think is interesting is in the news a lot, you're hearing today about employees speaking out a lot, right? And especially on the national scene, there's a lot talking in the last few months about sexual harassment and a lot of things happening about employees that are coming out and talking about what's happened. Is there a time limit on these type of things? Is there if somebody leaves employer and then claim something X number of years later, how does that work?
Yeah, so if it's a claim of sexual harassment generally and they're attempting to find liability on the employer, there is a discrete period of time in which the employee has to file that claim with an agency. The agency would be, in most cases, federally, the EOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And then there's state agencies that do similar things. So in the New England area, the Maine Human Rights Commission, Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination, in a lot of the southern states, they don't have similar state agencies, but the EOC is definitely the first one, and then a state organization. You would have, from a federal level, 300 days from the activity and 180 days from a state level, and that is a little bit hazy about when that 300 days starts running or when that 180 days starts running. But in most cases, if it's an adverse action that's occurred, that would be your time frame. So let's say we use a Hollywood example, right? Someone speaks out about sexual harassment generally and then doesn't get a promotion or doesn't get a piece in an upcoming film or something. If they were an employee generally, they could make that claim that the reason I didn't get the promotion or I didn't get the role was because of previous complaints I had made about the employer generally. And that would be an adverse action that would be actionable.
How about contractors? Right, because obviously the law does say that you don't have to be an employee in the case of harassment. It can be a vendor, it can be a contractor, it can be others. How does that play into the realm of it? I got her.
She did. He did.
I got her.
He did. Everyone can see that pause. Under Title VII, that's protecting employees generally. There are other public accommodation arguments that could be made regarding, and I mean, we're seeing it at the Supreme Court now, about whether or not you have to bake a cake for someone who has a different religious or social belief than you do. Independent contractors fall in this hole, and it's one of the reasons why the EOC, the Department of Labor, are trying to decrease the number of people who fall into this independent contractor realm, is so that they have these increased protections generally.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
When things come out of left field, having a game plan makes all the difference. Luckily, Farmers Insurance has been helping people cover their bases for 88 years, and they can help you too. Talk with an agent today so you can see if your coverage is ready for whatever curveballs may come your way. At Farmers, we know a thing or two because, well, we've seen a thing or two. Put our experience into play at Farmers.com. Farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Farmers.com.
Bum, 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 bum.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Did you know that RingCentral is the business phone system behind some of the fastest growing companies? Why RingCentral? Because it's a phone system in the cloud that easily grows with your company. Old phone systems are a mess of wires and cables. Adding an employee or office means figuring out that mess, which takes time that a fast-moving business doesn't have. RingCentral gives you a new, better way. Easily add employees and offices. Make any device act like a corporate phone, even your own cell phone. Visit ringcentral.com to see how.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Tani Alvarez from Verrill Dana, and we're having a great discussion here about when employees speak out. What employers can do about it.
We most definitely are having a wonderful discussion.
Here we are having a wonderful discussion. This might be called Stump the Attorney today.
It might be. It might be called that.
Something we could do today. And yours truly, the host, has a big smile on his face to possibly have done such a thing. It's very, very good.
If you ever questioned whether or not this is pre-rehearsed prior to recording, you now know your answer.
It is not. So, let's get to a question having to do with employers that work for government agencies or for, you know, counties or local ordinances. So let's talk a little bit, because that is different. And I think we should explain the difference, why people that are listening may go, I don't understand this, still working for an employer. I don't. Why do they have different rights, quote unquote, than I do? And how does that work?
So the First Amendment, the amendments to the Constitution, protect individuals from actions from the government. So the government shall not restrict the freedom of religion, shall not restrict the freedom of speech. In this situation, municipalities and governments, federal and state, act as employers, but also have heightened rights because they cannot permissibly restrict religion, speech, action in those senses. So not only do they have to act as an employer, but they also have to act as the government, which it is. So in that sense, the employees have added rights that the employer can't take adverse action against them based off of their freedom of speech. Now, that's not to say that there couldn't be incidents where there's violation of policies or practices, especially with regards to EOC laws or racist or sexist comments generally. We just need to remember that there's going to be a higher standard with regards to that freedom of speech.
So if employers that are government agencies, does this apply to subcontractors? In other words, federal contractors or – right. So if you're doing work with the government and you're a federal contractor, is that kind of a blending?
So it's not a blending, but it's important that you look at the contract that you have with the government. Interestingly enough, I find this to happen a lot in organizations where the operational side of the organization isn't speaking directly to human resources, which means that the contracts that you're entering into with the government, whether it be the state government or the federal government, likely have heightened requirements under especially equal employment laws, whether or not that's in order to hit hiring quotas or the additional notice needs to be provided if you're ever accused or any allegations are made regarding harassment. It's important that there is very finite review of the contract language itself to find out what your requirements are. I've never seen one that would place First Amendment duties or responsibilities onto the contractor, however, because they are not acting as the government. They're just acting kind of at the direction of the government.
Nonprofits, okay. Are they treated more like private employers, or how does that play into this?
Nonprofits are treated exactly like private employers, but the thing is you even have, I would say, more latitude generally. So let's say that you work for a domestic violence shelter generally, and one of your employees is accused of domestic violence or posts something online regarding, let's say it's about an NFL player who's been accused of domestic violence, right? And says the league shouldn't have suspended him or something along those lines, right? Now, talking about the NFL is completely outside of the work that they're doing at the domestic violence shelter. But if someone who has been found guilty of domestic violence and you've posted online that you think the NFL should continue to allow them to play and there should be no suspension, that's counter in many ways to what your organization is portraying to the general public. And therefore, the organization would have the right to take action against the employee, whether it's asking that the post be removed, terminating employment, or otherwise disciplining the individual.
A lot of states, as you know, when you start getting down to these cases, a lot of the agencies especially favor the employee, right? And whether you're in Maine, you're in Massachusetts, whether you're in New York, California, if you want to say typically the blue states, you have judges that predominantly favor the employee in these areas. How does that play out for employers that are dealing with multi-state jurisdictions, and when they're thinking about their policies, when they're thinking about whether or not they should deal with these issues or terminate in such a way?
It's extremely important to know the laws in every jurisdiction in which you have operations. Most New England states do not have any private action statutes, but there are a multitude of states, and interestingly enough, some of them are in the Southwest, that have statutes that very clearly say that you can't take adverse action against an individual based off of their non-work activities, right? It's part of the discussion and the argument that came into play with the Colorado marijuana case, and whether or not somebody smoking marijuana in their own free time, it's not affecting their ability to work, but they test positive. Can you discipline or terminate an individual as a result of that outside conduct? So it's important that you know the state laws in which you're operating, and then also make sure that your culture is such that you don't have one state that's way off, like one organization or one operational aspect that's doing its own thing that's completely opposite of what your culture is everywhere else. Because if your policies don't meld well, what you're going to get when we get to litigation generally is you're going to have these outliers where we treated one person differently than another person. And in part, that treatment maybe is easily explainable under the state law. But if we're going to follow the state law and act in that way, the question becomes, why wouldn't you just institute the most employee-friendly laws in every jurisdiction in which you work in?
No, it makes sense, right? It makes sense for that to do that. By the way, you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're speaking here on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. I'm your host, David Chulo. And, of course, our guest is Tony Alvarez, attorney with Verrill Dana. And we're talking about when employees speak out. And we love when they speak out. Right, Tony?
We love it.
And, yes, attorneys can be sarcastic, too. All right. So we've been talking about one of the things Jesus mentioned in the last segment, I should say, is about culture. Right? And so employers do a lot of surveys. Employee surveys, culture surveys, best place to work survey. By the way, I would love to see a survey called worst place to work. I just think it would be fun to do something different.
It sounds like a movie. We definitely should make a movie.
A movie called worst place to work. I'm sure there are a lot of people who would have their employers put in for that. But having said that, there is this fear sometimes when people fill out these forms that I'm not telling the truth. Because of fear of what you're talking about necessarily. I know it's anonymous. I know we're not going to fill it out. But there's this fear of retaliation. And I guess kind of all we've been talking about today is the fact of this freedom of speech versus retaliation by the employer. If I can't put on my Facebook what I really feel and my employer can terminate me for such a thing, then really that's retaliation for what I'm doing. So explain why it's either not retaliation or what the fine line between retaliation is and just freedom of speech.
It's really going to be content-based. And it's funny because as soon as you asked that question, my mind immediately went to the Supreme Court case in which the question was, what is pornography? And one of the justices says, I'll know it when I see it. It's similar in a speech setting as to what is appropriate and what is inappropriate. You're going to know it when you see it because it's going to violate your policies and practices. It's our hope. I think it's all employers' hopes that their employees, both at the time in which they're at work and when they're privately in their own residence, on Facebook, on their own time, are creating a better world. I mean, that sounds so silly and warm and fuzzy and like I'm talking from a Disney movie, but that everyone is acting in, I think, the community's best interest when they speak or they act, which means that when a post or a statement is made to the newspaper through a loudspeaker that is derogatory, racist, sexist, that conveys violence generally, that's when you're going to have action taken. Do I think action should be taken when somebody says, it's my Second Amendment right to bear arms and I don't believe there should be any restrictions? I don't think so. If an employer is taking adverse action on that basis, I would say that's extremely, it's high risk behavior, and it's high risk behavior because it's creating a culture in which the man is suppressing differences of opinions. It goes a little bit to the Google manifesto. I mean, granted, we're now almost six months since that came out and all of that happened. But there's a lot that can be taken from that manifesto generally about the fact that you want a diverse work environment that has differences of opinions. There's a very large difference between allowing and permitting there to be discourse kind of in the ranks and to discuss different opinions, to have differences of opinions, versus requiring that everyone think exactly the same way. So if the statement is, my Second Amendment right to bear arms should never be infringed, that's one thing. But if it's, I respect people's ability to shoot up churches, that's something different.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. I will say that that just shows how important it is to keep your policies up to date. And we're going to talk about that in the next segment because the social norms have changed, especially in the last 5-10 years. And what used to be things that were said that are, you know, outside the norm today are more mainstream or vice versa. And so there is this question about keeping your policy up to date. And we're going to talk about that in the next segment. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself.
You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Scott Tannen, founder of Bull & Branch. If you're driving to the mall, turn around. Make it easy on yourself. Give your loved ones what they really want but rarely get. A perfect night's sleep with a set of Bull & Branch sheets. Bull & Branch sheets are made from 100% organic cotton and are incredibly soft and comfortable. And because we only sell online at bullandbranch.com, they cost less than half of what you'd pay for luxury linens at the store. We take care of everything. Shipping is free and our sheets arrive beautifully packaged in our signature box. No gift wrapping needed. We have thousands of five-star reviews and even three U.S. presidents sleep on Bull & Branch. We guarantee you'll love them too. That's why we let you sleep on our sheets for 30 nights. If you don't, return them and get your money back. Right now, we'll give you $50 off your first set of sheets when you go to bullandbranch.com. Spelled B-O-L-L and branch.com. Promo code SLEEP. $50 off at bullandbranch.com. Promo code SLEEP.
AutoZone presents your engine's antifreeze. Coolant system failure is the number one cause of engine-related breakdowns. Keeping your engine running cool starts with engine coolant. And during the winter, it keeps your engine from freezing up. Get a gallon of Peak 5050 Long Life antifreeze and coolant for $7.99 after mail-in rebate. So visit your local AutoZone. With over 5,000 locations, the right supplies and good advice are just around the corner, so you can fix your car with confidence. Hoods up, America. See store for restrictions and details. Get in the zone.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then,
hey!
The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock. And it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And we're back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM and presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Tony Alvarez, attorney with Verrill Dana. We're talking about when employees speak out. I think the first couple segments have really been a great conversation about, you know, what employees can and cannot do and how it is interesting. What has changed over the years about what they can and cannot do. We talked at the end of the last segment about social norms that have changed. And I mentioned in this segment, we want to talk about some of the policy things that you should be looking at, what policies really apply. Tony, things do change. And I know you're a big supporter of keeping your handbook and policies up to date on a yearly basis at a minimum, I would think.
Absolutely.
But things do change. And so what would be some of the policies or things that people may not have thought of or things that they need to keep updated to keep up with this?
One of the things is making sure that your decision makers are not going rogue, kind of, so that there is a policy or procedure in place that if something like this happens, there are standards that need to be followed before action is taken. The last thing you want is to find yourself in a position where supervisor, a manager, assistant supervisor sees something online, and the next day when the employee comes in, they're screaming at the top of their lungs about how inappropriate that was, and taking their own beliefs, their own culture, and making it the cultural norm of the organization itself. This is a groupthink type situation, and I know that sounds silly, but in most cases, when we're dealing with speech or actions outside of work, there is a very fine line that we are walking to make sure that we are not oppressing our workforce, but simultaneously maintaining a culture or whatever the culture is that the employer wants to maintain, which means you're going to want two, likely three opinions as to whether or not speech or activities crossed a line, violated a policy or practice. And then how do we go about responding? And I think part of HR and HR law is a balancing between two things, what the law says, and then also we're dealing with people. So how do we maintain that touchy-feely aspect so that people want to come to work, so that we are a best place to work generally?
Yeah, it is the emotional side that typically trips up employers, right? Supervisors see something. It's kind of like, you know, pause before you speak, but sometimes they don't, and emotion kicks in, and they say things. And then HR goes, you really didn't say that, did you? And then it goes to that point. When the emotion kicks in, what are some of the things that you can tell employers that that will happen if they don't think first?
Well, you're going to be talking to me, which everyone loves. You are going to be talking to me. That's really the thing. And that's why I stress so much manager training. And I know that sounds silly. Are you really telling me that you don't want people talking to you, Tawny? Doesn't that defeat the whole purpose of being a lawyer? Well, no, because I'd really rather people have proactive steps in place so that they're not reactively contacting me, because my job reactively is super fun. I really enjoy being reactive, but it's much more difficult and it's much more costly. And it's much more difficult, which is why it's fun for me, but not for the employers. It takes so much more time. It costs so much more money. It's so much more, it includes so much more stress. So that's why by having appropriate manager and supervisor training, you're creating a foundation for your organization in which they aren't just spouting off whatever they want to say, and they're recognizing the liability that they're creating by doing that.
You know, social norms change, as we said, and one of the things that you hear a lot of now is that what was okay to say years ago isn't okay to say today, right? And boys will be boys. There's a lot of things that you hear in the workplace today. You know, it's interesting. I did a harassment training, this must have been about 4 or 5 months ago, and when we were talking about harassment being, quote unquote, unwanted, right? Unwanted behavior. Somebody, an older gentleman, stood up and go, but I want it! And of course, you know, that got a good chuckle out of the crowd. And everybody go, oh, that's Bob. By the way, Bob is a protected name, not the actual name. We're protecting the innocent here today. And I'll have a disclaimer from Tawny said at the end of the show. So no worries. But Bob wasn't really being funny. He actually believed, like, you know, that's I got no issue with that. None of this stuff is offensive to me, and I truly believe that it didn't offend him. Like, it just was the way it's been for the last 50 years, and so this really is an interesting time for the employer to try to understand what was and what is, isn't it?
It most definitely is, and it's interesting that you bring this up, because this weekend I was watching reruns of Bewitched, and
it is an old show,
and probably the fourth episode in the first season, it involves Samantha having a dinner party, and during the dinner party, Darren's boss gets inappropriate and uncomfortable, and after, Samantha turns the boss into a dog, but Darren's response is, other women know how to handle it, and you need to learn how to handle it to be a good wife. And considering where we are socially right now, I was completely blown away, in part because Bewitched is written by a woman. So it's a female writer who wrote this scene that it's okay to accept this harassment to further your husband's career. And when we talk about this harassment and culturally speaking, I mean, it can come from anywhere. It can come from clients. It can come from customers. It can come from independent contractors, and making sure that we're creating an environment where our employees feel safe being themselves, but simultaneously recognize that the world does not revolve around them, and their actions also have an effect on the other employees who work with them. So in this scenario, yes, Bob thinks that what he's doing is fine, but he is being so self-centered that he's not recognizing the effect it has on other people, and not just the people who potentially are being harassed, but who are witnessing it and who maybe don't know what to say. And in that situation, age does play a role. And we run into this so often when you have multi-generational workforces, that you have one generation that knows the way it's always been done. It's been effective and efficient. Why should they change just because times are changing?
Right. I mean, it is the, we talk about this all the time from a generational standpoint. The one thing the younger generation never will have until later is experience, right? You can't buy experience. You can't watch experience. You can't tech Google experience. But it, in the older generation, the change becomes the challenge, right, between the two. And you see quite a bit of that on the legal side, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, and especially in employment law with HR, it's changing monthly, weekly. I mean, you're seeing new sites about, there's 40-something different ways to refer to gender. When we're doing handbook review now, we're careful that we're not putting he-she. I mean, there was a time where, and a time not so long ago, where handbooks would say he, with the understanding that it was both masculine and feminine, and contracts would say the same thing, he, with the understanding that it refers to both masculine and feminine. We then started doing he/she for the employee. And then sometimes we tried to make it grammatically to say there. At this point in time, we're trying to stay away completely from he and she, because we don't want people who don't identify with either of those genders to feel as though these handbook provisions aren't relative to who they are.
Yeah, it really is different, right, from a employment standpoint. I mean, it's the same thing with federal contractors, right, in the EEO forms that they have to fill out and identifying their ethnicity and race and all that, albeit some of those forms have not completely been updated yet to you know, what it is. It's more other at this point, if you identify that way. Is there anything that you could tell an employer from a handbook perspective that they should really look at today, other than specifically he, she, or anything like that? Any other specific certain policies as we wrap up this segment that they should immediately look at today in their handbook?
Yeah, definitely go to your EEO anti-harassment, anti-retaliation policies, and make sure that you're clear that it's not just activity at work that's going to be affected by this policy, that it's anything that affects work, that has some correlated effect to work. So if you're using derogatory statements to a coworker, but it's at the bar after work, if that employee doesn't feel safe working with you, or there's threatening outside of work, or someone says that they have a gun, and the other person feels threatened, I mean, make sure that you are set up in a way in which someone's not going to argue, you only came after me because, you know, insert reason here, because I had an affair with Susan's brother's aunt's sister. I don't even know how that worked out generally, but you hear those stories.
I don't have much to say as we end this segment on the brothers, sisters, aunts, cousins, twice removed relationship. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB 100.5 FM. Please come back for more. We'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know, it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. As always at this time, we want to talk about our sponsors. They are what make this program happen each and every week. And I, your host, David Chulo, are very happy to have amazing sponsors here at the HR Power Hour. So they are Jackson Lewis, All We Do Is Work, Redmond Winchell, Counselors at Law, Sheehan Finney, Verrill Dana, The Body Architect, Strategic HR, Volk Packaging. And again, I want to thank all our sponsors for their great support of this fantastic HR educational radio show. Today we've been talking with Tawny Alvarez, attorney at Verrill Dana, a great sponsor of the HR Power Hour. Tawny, we love having you on.
I love being on.
And you do the tip of the week every week, you or some of your colleagues, I should say.
Absolutely.
And by the way, if you haven't listened to the tips, you can go to hrpowerhour.com. At the top, it says tip of the week. You can click on that and you can listen to all the tips that Tawny and her team have come up with. They're great, by the way. They're awesome. So we've been talking about when employees speak out. I guess at the end of the day, as we wrap up the show today, the lines between what an employee can say and what an employer can do has really blurred, hasn't it, over the years?
It most definitely has. And in part, that's because there's so much more information that is available and at our fingertips. I mean, technology has done great things, but it also means that we have this wealth of data that is available to us at our fingertips at all times. And I think as I think about this concept more and more, it also further emphasizes the importance of putting the right people in positions of management in your organization. I mean, when that line is blurred outside of kind of in technology generally, it becomes harder to determine when someone's acting personally and when someone's acting professionally. So when you have a supervisor or a manager who says something, and even if it's completely unrelated to your organization, if they have an outward appearance, if they're dealing with clients, if they speak for your organization publicly, people aren't going to presume that there's a difference between who they are outside of work and who they are inside. So while everyone is climbing to the top and wants that title and wants that raise, understanding that there are more responsibilities that come with it, not just on the job, but also outside of it, and making sure that employers convey that to employees is extremely important.
No, I think that's a really good point, is sometimes you don't realize what you've done in a lesser role or what you've said in a lesser role changes as you move and become more of a presence in the organization, right? That's what you're talking about, is presence.
Absolutely. I mean, Google's memory is such that something that you say now, if you have plans, hopes, desires, dreams to be CEO, to be in the C-suite, to be a manager, to be a supervisor, that stuff potentially can come back and bite you. And recognizing that the title means something in a lot of organizations, and even if it doesn't mean something in the organization, in our society, in our culture, it means something. And in a lot of cases, it means that you have authority to speak for the organization, and your beliefs are such that the organization also holds those same beliefs and values.
So as we wrap up today, three quick tips that wrap up the show of what employers need to do to be prepared for when employees speak out.
Manager training, making sure that people are on top of knowing what their supervisors can and can't do. Two, having good policies and practices in place that outline what steps will be taken if speech or actions outside of the work could adversely affect employment inside. And then third, use common sense. And sometimes that's really difficult to remember in the heat of the moment, but always use common sense, because there is a lot at issue when you're dealing with this.
Tawny, it was great having you on the show today. Another great show. When employees speak out, we'll have you back soon.
Thank you, David. It was wonderful to be here.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
This is Joanna Bowers from VeralDana. Whether and when employees should be allowed to work remotely continues to be a significant point of debate among employers. While remote work is expanding in some sectors, there have also been high-profile examples of employers reducing opportunities for remote work and bringing employees back into the physical workplace. If you are considering allowing employees to work remotely, you should consider a number of factors, including how you will ensure that employees are accurately recording their time worked, whether employees are properly taking any breaks required by law, and how to ensure employees' productivity. For each of these issues, open communication and clear expectations will be essential. Another significant issue is how you will maintain the integrity of any sensitive or confidential information employees have access to when working remotely. This is both a policy and an IT question. You should ensure that you have appropriate policies and confidentiality agreements for your remote employees. And you should also work with your organization's IT professionals about how your systems and software can protect your sensitive and confidential information. These are only a few issues employers should think about with respect to remote employees. So if you're considering allowing employees to work from home, contact me or another member of VeralDana's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success. And stay tuned for Inside Portland with Bob Witkowski.